Great, thanks everyone. Almost on time. Just the last few guys can take their seats. I see we're starting filling up here from the front as well. Thanks for that. So our next session, we have two presenters representing on retirement funds, enhancing member access to advice. I think following on from the previous session we had and just realizing how important that advice is to the individual members. And two well-known presenters, Davie de Villiers and Rita Kuhl, both from Alex Forbes. So Davie is the group CEO. He was appointed group chief executive of Alex Forbes in 2018. Prior to his appointment, he was the chief executive officer at Sanlam Employee Benefits, a position he held since 2013. He started his career at Sanlam as an actuary in 1993 in Sanlam Life Insurance before assuming several senior executive positions in the business over a period of 25 years. During this period, he broadened his business acumen while gaining an in-depth knowledge of the technicalities and markets served by each of these units. Davie has a wealth of experience in the employee benefits and investment management industry and believes that the employee benefits industry can have a huge influence in South Africa by really changing people's lives through enabling financial peace of mind. He's at the helm of a strategic shift at Alex Forbes. We see them regularly in the news of corporate decisions and things being implemented. He's charting a course for the company's growth and impact, and under his leadership, the company is poised to extend its leading position across admin, retirement, healthcare, and asset management capabilities. Davie's vision for Alex Forbes includes a transformation into the most inclusive retail financial advice firm in Southern Africa, and above all, is committed to demonstrating a meaningful and positive impact on the stakeholders that the company serves. Rita will be joining him for the presentation. She's the head of individual consulting strategy and senior financial advisor at Alex Forbes. Rita has been in the financial industry for 25 years as a retirement fund consultant and a financial advisor. She structures best practice guidelines for the individual advisors at Alex Forbes to continuously improve the advice provided. She focuses on providing relevant financial advice to individuals so they can make impactful decisions and benefit from improved financial outcomes. Before her career in financial services, she worked in architecture. She loves reading art, traveling, languages, and continuously learning as many things as possible. Her qualifications include a postgrad diploma in financial planning, diploma in insurance, a BCom in economics and business management, and a BTech architectural design. She's a certified financial planner, as our previous speaker. So I think very well qualified to address us today. So thanks, Davie and Rita.
Thank you, everyone. Apologies for the long bio. Only thing that's true on there is that I'm passionate about retirements. The rest you can all ignore. I must first say, Gia was a wonderful guest, and you know it didn't take him long to convince me to come and talk because it's a good opportunity and I thought a very relevant topic. But he sends the email and then there's just Gia Mallet. And I'm thinking, yes, if this oak doesn't tell me what's his name, then I must probably call him Mr. Mallet, you know. So I start emailing Mr. Mallet. He starts emailing me back, Mr. de Villiers, you know. He forgets the Davie. So we're on very, very high-level terms between the two of us. But coming from Kroonstad, I think, you know, we can drop the misters now. thanks again for the opportunity. We're going to have, I brought Rita and thanks for standing in. She's really an expert and it's about advice, obviously, but it's also about retirements, you know, so we focused on retirements and I think it's quite relevant for this discussion. I'll try and be very quick. Normally I don't get it right, so that there's lots of time for questions. So please think of questions. Some of the questions to the previous speaker was already, you know, apt for our discussion as well, and we can discuss some of those again. So please, happy to have a longer discussion at the end. It's a very important topic, but it's not a complicated topic. So you know, we could only get a few slides on it in terms of discussing it. Let's jump right into it. We thought of starting by just giving you a little bit of stats, and In the retirement sector, you all know the stats. It's been quoted every day. Every time somebody gives results, whether it's us or Sanlam or Mutual, you know, you start off by saying people aren't retiring comfortably. The stat speaks for itself. And you know, I want to start off right up front by saying we as an industry need to do a lot more. There's something wrong. Yes, Tupot might solve some of it in the long run. Yes, members don't save, members take their cash on switching jobs. We know all their reasons, but the ultimate answer is people aren't retiring comfortably. And that's why we exist as an industry, specifically retirement. So this advice part is just a small part of being more successful. And we should start, you know, I'm running ahead of myself, but we should start when we go through these things, stop talking. Somebody asked a great question, what should I as a fund actuary, you know, do for my fund and try and push for my fund? We should, you know, stop worrying about governance and conflict of interest. All those things must happen, but that can't be the only thing that we worry about. Ultimately, we must worry about the member, and we must say, are there enough people talking to these members? You know, that's what we must monitor at fund level. At fund level, when we sit in a trustee meeting, we must ask the question every time, even as a fund actuary. So how many members were spoken to, you know, that are close to retirement or that had a death in the family or whatever? You know, are you doing this? Are there providers that are doing that? That's the questions we must ask so that people can get the right advice. And counseling is just part of that. So where's the slides? There. Only 8% of members reach a replacement ratio. You know, only 31% average replacement ratio. And these numbers change, but it's quite accurate, and it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed for a long time. We see slight improvements, and then we get very excited, and we take, like, years to unpack why the improvement was there. But, you know, it stays in a very low band. Whether it increased from 8 to 6%, or from 6 to 8%, it's not going to make a big difference. And you know, as I said, our answer is more people need to be interacted with. Whether you call it advice, whether you call it counseling, or whether you just call it help, you know, people need it, and they need to understand it. And there's lots of reasons why people don't get advice and why they don't get to the counseling and why they don't talk to people. And some of the faults is ours, and we can unpack that. Some more insights. We do the other thing I wanted to apologize for is the Forbes slides. When you ask me to do something, it'll be basic. So the slides will be the slides that we have, and I'll tell the right story to it. So apologies for the Forbes slide. I know there's other frameworks. This isn't a marketing exercise. We'll tell you, you know, how we see the market. So apologies for that. But this is a study that we do constantly with all our members, and we interact and we talk to them, and then we put it in the feedback that we give to trustees as well on an annual basis, and we call it member insights, and then we talk to them. But you know, if it takes only 5 days for a member to consume their full income, or to spend 80% of their salary, that is telling. And that means people are indebted. It means, you know, there you can see the average debt-to-income ratio of 69%. All of these stats support the fact that obviously members can't retire comfortably. Also, the reason why they don't save enough, why they take the cash when they leave the jobs, all of those things. So it's a never-ending cycle that gets them to more poverty and less retirement. What we must understand, and that's why I say, you know, we mustn't just offer the advice and say yes, but it is there, or offer the email, or offer the digital, or offer the person that, you know, can be called. Even only offer the RBC. It must be further than that, because people are scared to ask. People feel inferior. They feel that this question is going to be stupid. And therefore they don't want to ask, because they don't have enough money. And, you know, even with the little money that they had, they could have made a better choice, but they don't ask. So in some form of way, and I want to come back to the question, I don't know who asked it, it was somewhere up here, was asked by a fund actuary, so what can we do within funds? Somewhere we must say, you know, we must force members to talk to, you know, advisors or the fund counselors or, you know, the administrators or whatever it is that the fund put in place, because it is for their help, or we must just make it easier and more accessible for them. They don't have enough disposable income, and the products are very, very complex. I said I won't deviate, but I sat into a we held these retirement sessions, people 5 years from retirement, and then anybody can come in. It's on a Saturday morning, and then all these old women come in because they get, you know, a lot of food. And then a big part of the presentation, you know, you start off very easily, you know, and then it goes into guaranteed annuity versus living annuity. And I promise you, the room temperature just drops. The eyes drop, it's cold, because people don't even understand that bit. And that's the thing that we go, yeah, but should the living annuity be like this withdrawal rate or that, and the level of funds and the aggressiveness of the investments? They don't even understand why they should choose the one or the other. And if you start explaining, you know, there are 10 million more questions come up. And that is a person that is 3-4 years from retirement. And that's the backlog problem that we have. That's the problem that we have to address. We will never explain to somebody in actuarial terms what a guaranteed annuity is versus a living annuity and to understand the risk. But somebody must at least have a gut feel of where they want to go. And we must try and make that simpler. And that must happen when they're 40 years old, 50 years old, not 2 years from retirement. So I just wanted to say, I mean, I was gobsmacked, because the slides are like very, very simple. Then the people come back and they say, okay, so what are shares again? What is equity again? And this is it's exec level. I promise you, it's not lower income level. This is exec level. So it is a problem. It is a problem in the industry. Let's start with counseling versus advice. All of you know that. I didn't know where to pitch the info from the start, but let's start with the basics. Counseling is purely information. It is purely given factual information, and it is at fixed points during the lifetime. Joining a job, leaving a job. It actually means that they get it within a few days of each other if they go to both, but, you know, at least that's compulsory, and then at retirement and at death, I think. You know, so those are given dates for counseling, and it is only factual, not advice, just information sharing. And the benefit that that has brought, I'll talk to it now on the next slide, the benefit that that has brought to the retirement industry has been phenomenal. You would think that, yes, it's on a piece of paper, or it's available on an email, or, you know, on the website. But the fact that people can now ask it, the fact that we make it more regularly available, the fact that we make it more easily accessible in terms of being able to understand it, because it's now an industry practice and it's a law, you know, now suddenly people have at least the basics. They have at least the basics. They understand at least the basics. And that's been a massive, massive go forward. And then it goes into ERBC and advice, which we'll unpack over time, where people must make choices and think about holistically where they retire. But the counseling is a starting point with just the pure info. On our research, and this is research-based, obviously talking to members and looking at decisions over time, and those aren't just words. I said to Rita when she put it on the slide, it just looks like nice words, you know, outcomes that we would want from counseling. But this is physically people that have been counseled, that we've asked and that we've interviewed. And people understand a lot better. You can read the words there. They do make more informed decisions. Even just the tax, understanding the tax effect, they make more informed decisions. People did save more. They kept more money in. They would have taken everything in cash at retirement, and then they do save some. On switching jobs, they save some. And they bought more pensions, where they would have taken a lot more in cash. And that is anecdotal evidence. So just from the counseling, just from understanding, okay, if you take 10 Rand versus 12 Rand, this is the effect. You know, people make the right choices. So it shows that we're on the right track, but we have to do a lot more. And then it's not just for the member, it's also for the company, for the trustees, for the corporate, for the business that, you know, wants to create a better life for their members, so that they're more engaged, so that they operate better. And those things are again, it's very easy to understand. And as I said, we can unpack each of those in a lot of detail. But it does provide better outcomes for members, which makes it easier for the corporate to employ them and better working conditions. It does support the fiduciary duties that we have, peace of mind, and then obviously improve productivity from employees. We've seen these things through the interviews, through the research, just from counselling, you know, in a very difficult situation, a difficult environment. The last 5 years hasn't been easy for anybody to live in, never mind, you know, people close to retirement or saving for retirement with all the debt. And this was the feedback. So it does help, and counselling is there to stay, and counselling has been a great addition to retirements. And these are the things that we've already talked about before starting a job, at leaving a job, ongoing assistance when there's, say, a death in the family or marriage or so, and then preparing to retire. Very easy to understand. We'll talk about the conflict a little bit later. And then there's the concept of enhanced counseling, which is basically, you know, a lower level of advice, but it is advice, and it must be performed by somebody with the right credentials. And you know, I think when it was legislated, it was probably intended to be very mutually exclusive. You know, there's a fund, and a fund provides emails to all its members with the basic info, and when the member calls in, he can get the basic info that pertains to him, just to make more info available to the members. And then the advice would still be the advice. You go on, you know, when you exit, you go out and you ask for an advisor outside, whether the fund provides that advisor or a list of the advisors, or whether you find them yourselves. And this is where I think the enhanced counseling actually comes in. It's very, very difficult to talk to a member, and Rita will talk to it a little bit later, just the practicality of it. Because, you know, we as actuaries are quite good at setting things out and doing all the scenarios and whatever. But as soon as you get to the practical, the member always has the next question. You can't just give him the facts. He always has the next question. Yes, but, and what would you do? And what if? And then it starts becoming advice. So you have to have the continuum. You have to be able to help him. We see the basic advisors, or the basic counselors, fulfilling a once-off initial job, and they do a lot, but the biggest requirement is for the enhanced counseling. You know, where we give a little bit of advice, where we tell them a little bit of, yes, but these are your options, and if you do this, this will happen, and tell me a little bit more about you. It's still not advice, it's still not holistic planning, it's just pertaining to the effect there, but it does have quite a good impact. And then you want to talk about this, or is it still mine? Still mine. Okay. Seems like a bit of a monologue up here, but we'll get to questions. The point here is basically what I've already said. So I think we're making the same points over, and I'm running ahead of myself. But the need for holistic planning is given. Not everybody can afford it. Not everybody gets it. Not everybody's there. Then we work backwards, and then we say, okay, you know, ERBC with a legislated advisor at the helm, there to give the normal normal info, but being able to help with certain events around retirement. You know, what makes it easy for us as a business is we focused on retirement. So it's really about retirement. So it makes the continuum from RBC through to advice very easy. It's not, you know, holistic tax planning, estate planning, all of those things. It's just basically thinking about retirement. The practicalities, as I said, around that Rita will cover just now. But I think there's a lot more that has to happen. That's my kind of my message on this slide. There's a lot more that has to happen for us to be able to say that this is actually working in practice. It's actually working for the members. At the surface, it is making a difference, but it's not becoming interactive enough. This is how we put it on a slide. You know, as we said, RBC was implemented, it was legislated, there were certain things that we had to do, and what we very quickly saw is that there's a continuum, and the biggest value is actually not on the day before retirement. The biggest value is actually this in-between stages. And we've now, just to make it a little bit formal, to make it a little bit easier for our people to understand, you know, and for to give people certain jobs to do, we've created certain dates. But it's actually a continuum where people have to speak to people in the retirement funds, to retirement fund members. Obviously, you can't speak to them every day. You'll irritate them, and they actually don't want to speak to you. But there's lots of these dates where they need you and where we can proactively kind of call them or make it more aware for them to call us both ways. And that continuum has made, you know, 10 times the difference relative to what it was before when it was just on the dates. So we operate on that continuum now, and it's already made a big difference. You must shout when it's your turn.
After my money movies.
The RBC is the factual information, ERBC, factual information with a little bit of advice is how I see it, and then you get holistic planning. You can't do any of this without the tech. And that's the last component that goes across all three of those areas, and that's good communication. Now, in our world as actuaries, you know, you send an email out and that's it, or you send a brochure out and that's it, or you just put it on the website and that's it. We've done our job. It doesn't work like that. This communication must be interactive. And the people must be able to ask a question back. Otherwise, it goes just to the bin, and they don't read it. So again, we started with brochures. Again, we started with, you know, other sites, other types of communication. And again, going back to the fund actuary, you know, a lot of these communications were put in the agenda packs, you know, to be distributed by the company. Then the member reads it even less. You must be able to connect with the member directly for them to see it as something that's important that they have to read. And it is about the tech. It's not about emails. So constant communication on top of all of this is the way to get it right. And we've developed a toolkit which is just, you know, points in time. So the member can go in and he can say, okay, I've now had a divorce, or I had a marriage, or I had a kid. What do I do? And then there's one or two questions or one or two answers, and it's a very easy journey. So, you know, how many members use that is the problem, but at least it's there, and it's part of the journey. So it's not just, it's on top of the normal communication and the normal emails and the normal things. But at every life stage, there's a short journey for the member to go through and to understand what they have to do with tools that they can play with. And we felt that was needed as part of the advice journey. I do want to say a few things at the end, but Rita felt that it's quite important that she talks about the advice component.
Cool. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody, for letting a non-actuary into the building. I was afraid that I would have to write the Mensa test, but they snuck me in under the line. So thanks for bearing with me today. Both Darby and myself are passionate about retirement, and I even know some of you because I've worked with you years ago at Alex Forbes, and it's nice to see that we're still in the industry and still trying to make a difference in people's lives. So luckily, the speaker before us, Laura, had a wonderful presentation about the value of advice and what advisors do. But I do know that actuaries like to have a few numbers with things. So we did find a a study that shows the value in percentages, how an advisor adds value to a client. And this was a study that was done last year by Russell Investments, an American company. And it was, I can see, based on a study that has been coming from Vanguard, where it, some of you might be aware of that, that's been around since 2001. And it shows the alpha that an advisor adds. And it started out fairly low, and it started out years ago in like 2.5%, and then it went up. And when I checked this morning, the latest one says up to 3%, but it's not necessarily a consistent 3% that is added to a client's portfolio. Through the some years you're going to save more, and some years you're going to save less. But now the Russell study, if you look at the breakdown of the, you can see there, you can potentially give more than 5% more to the results that your clients would have. And you can also see that the smallest component is the thing that a lot of us in the industry spend the most time on and think is the most valuable, and that is rebalancing of a portfolio. So clients started with 60% in shares, and because shares outperformed, eventually you sit with, if you don't rebalance, you eventually will sit with 80 or 90% in shares, which is not where you wanted the whole thing to be. And then by rebalancing, there was value add, but it was 0.27%. The next most important, or the most value add, would be from planning for with families and tax savings. So tax saving is very straightforward. We understand that there are specific ways that you can improve your tax. You don't, by making more contributions to your fund, you can get the tax benefit on your income. It can go all the way past and into retirement and at retirement with Section 10C deductions for additional contributions, that you can structure your income and thereby saving tax. So we all understand that. The biggest thing, the biggest impact, is the behavioral coaching. And we see this again and again and again. It is that client who, as they, as Laura explained earlier, it's the client who sells when it's most, buys at the top and sells at the bottom. And they continuously, through their emotional fear and greed, they do the wrong thing continuously. So it is a number of things that we see. It is the fact that you, we are saying here for counseling that we are going to be talking to people when they leave a job and when they join a job. Guess when you are probably very, very stressed. When you leave your job and you have to pack that desk that you've sat at it for 10 years and you have to put everything away and you cannot think at all, when do they put a piece of paper in front of you? Right then. Oh, just fill in this little form so that the HR is not upset and they can clean up their books. When are you very, very busy and very, very stressed? When you start a new job. So are you going to listen to the information that is being put in front of you? Probably not. When are other points in your life when you're very, very stressed and you need the information, and that is where that the customized experience benefit comes in. When does that happen? When you get divorced and you need information, are you really, really thinking clearly as we as advisors think you are or hope that you are thinking? Probably not. When you lose your spouse, do you know how many people get sold a really, really bad product just when their spouse has passed away, as we heard earlier as well? It takes months before the person even is in the right emotional state to be able to make a decision that is not going to affect the rest of their lives negatively. So, and that's why you need the advice and the person who sits there and say, okay, we're going to be there for you and with you until you are emotionally ready to make that very, very big decision. We're not even stepping into that discussion about do they understand guaranteed versus living. It is just, are you emotionally ready to be able to make that decision? And before I carry on, the value of advice, I think a lot of people have this idea that as soon as you hear the word advice, that it equates sales. That's not correct. People go, oh, well, I'm not going to speak to an advisor because they're going to cost me money. So there's lots of things that you pay money for every single day. You buy food, you buy clothes. Nobody says, oh, but if I want to be dressed, I'm going to have to pay money. But now, suddenly, You go to a doctor, you go to a lawyer, no problem to get advice and to pay for advice. So why is it different in the financial industry? So the other misconception that people have about advice is that you have to be rich to ask for advice or get advice. I always say that you get rich by getting advice. But people are so afraid of advisors, and it is, as Darby said, people think we're going to judge them. Ooh, is this the third or the fourth cup of coffee that you bought and didn't make at home? Ooh, well, you're definitely going to have a net replacement ratio of 68% instead of 74% because of this coffee that you had yesterday. So why would people want to talk to us if they feel judged? So it is a continuous process to improve that the knowledge and the for people to accept that they are allowed to ask these questions and they are going to be better off when they get to that advice. So we are very, very, we want people to understand that you get information, and you get advice. And the two things work together. Hold on. Sorry. The two things work together like Dr. Google and an actual doctor. If you Dr. Google your symptoms for this headache that you have, you could either diagnose yourself with brain cancer or dehydration. That's quite a big difference between the two. So now you have, by luck or by chance, found the right Dr. Google site that says, okay, well, it's probably not brain cancer at this point in time. Now, what we are saying, if we only provide counseling, we are saying that you now have the information, but you don't have anybody who can help you with a prescription. So now you have to go and check, is it something that you smoke that's going to make you feel better, or is it water, or is it chemo, or whatnot? But you don't have that help to say, don't worry, don't stress, it's not what you think it is. It is something very simple, we can sort it out, and here's the prescription to help you. And that is very often that the product that you need, but it's not always a product that is the solution when you speak to an advisor. It does help, and every now and then, a tax-free savings account or an RA is going to affect your outcome, but it doesn't automatically have to go, ooh, there's a client with a need, we now need to sell them a product. Okay, so what we have found in the is what happens in practice, and why are we still struggling with such low 8% of people have 75% of their salary at retirement. So one of the problems that we have seen is that members get that information too late. First of all, they might not want the information. They might say, and that's actually one of the things that we have found, that when our counselors contact the person, they say, don't worry, I understand. We know for a fact they don't understand because they are taking cash the whole time and they're not getting better outcomes. But they will say, okay, I understand, I don't need the advice. But also, by the time that we get information from an employer, that person has already made the decision on how much they're going to contribute if they're a joiner. They have already decided that they're taking the money in cash if they're a leaver. The information, we can only contact members if we have the contact details. If the employer does not provide that, it is very difficult to get hold of that person. So what? Luckily, now we have more and more employers that provide the information to us, and we have also, through RBC, we have now asked our employers to please provide us that information, even the day that the person signs their employment contract. We can then get hold of them and say, listen, let us help you make that correct decision. But if you get to a situation too late, you're never going to be able to change the person's outcome. We have put other things in place as well, that where we actually contact people where they have already completed a form saying that they want cash, and contacting them to say, we could just process this piece of paper and give you the cash, but do you understand the tax implications, et cetera, et cetera? And quite a number of people, where they contact them, change their minds, and they say, oh, I didn't realize that. And they change their minds, and they put it in a preservation fund, or they leave it in fund, and all of those nice things. And it goes also hand in hand with the communication and the way that we communicate to members. Yes, the legislation says that the bare minimum is to write it, but most of us, well, a lot of us are probably visual people, and a written piece of information will be sufficient. But not everybody is like that, and they would maybe like to hear something. And so you have to perhaps have a video. You have to have maybe different sessions. You have to do it more than once. You have to do it in different languages. But the communication method, how you get hold of that person, has to be good. So, for example, there are some corporates where we cannot get hold of the staff members by phoning because they are standing in front of they're doing surgery or something like that, or they're working in a mine, and they cannot answer a telephone call when you are phoning. So now you don't want the situation to be that you'd say, well, I tried to get hold of the person and they don't want advice. Actually, they weren't able to take a telephone call. So are there other ways to communicate with a person? And make sure that the information that you get is also up to date, so that, but luckily there are ways and means to get around that, because we can now get hold of client information from credit bureaus and things like that, and we have asked our employers to provide us the information so that we can communicate with the people faster and easier. Now, the big thing that we have found is that the employer interaction and involvement in this whole process, be it counseling or advice, need to be good. And sometimes employers actually negatively affect their members, because and I'm sure some of you have come across this, and I'm not saying everybody does this, but there are times where the HR person sits in front of the member and says, listen, just for you, I think cash is going to be the best. Because they assume that the person doesn't understand how cash works, or how they just think, oh, okay, I know this person has a lot of debt and things like that. And they actually make that decision for the member, which is not correct, and definitely not in terms of the FASE Act and everything like that. So it is a problem that we find that through the processes that various companies have, they could negatively affect the members by choosing on their behalf. Also, it could be we have a few employers that do not want to have any advice that flow through to the staff members, because they might have had bad experiences with certain advisors somewhere previously in their lives. And I'm not saying all advisors are 100%, and there are definitely some that are going to maybe look at their own pocket before anybody else. But And those people have definitely given the industry a very bad name. But it is the same with absolutely every single industry. You're going to get some people who are not 100% as they should be. But don't just say that everybody is going to treat your members badly, and therefore don't give any advice or any access to advice to those staff members. The member demographics also play a role. You have people who are more or less financially astute and technology astute. So it might be that you send a WhatsApp or you send an email, and they don't have an email address. And then they are reliant on their employer to give access to those methods of communication. So we have to not be narrow-minded when we do this, the advice and the counseling components together, because we have to sort out for people who are now retiring and who cannot do a digital signature. So if you want to set up a product and all the service providers are now moving away from paper-based and everything is nice and electronic, but there are still some people who don't understand how the OTP system works, who would like to sign something. So now you are back to printing that application form or the form that they need to sign, so that it can be hand-signed and it has to be scanned in again. So you go from from that side of the continuum to the Gen Zs who are entering the workforce, who will do everything within 3 seconds on whatever device they have in their hands at that point in time. So where do we can't just be stagnant and stay with one way of doing going forward. So what can be improved in this structure? We know that counseling makes a difference. People are asking for advice and they want the help. So we should expand that and make more and more information available. As we said earlier, so at the moment, the legislation only requires us to communicate at very specific points. But guess what? that is not necessarily when you need an advisor or you need that information. You need it when your child gets born, when you get divorced, when you're thinking about buying a new car, and much more interesting and fun things than retirement. We are all sitting here focusing on retirement. Guess what happens before you get to retirement? Life. In this, this is our job. This is what we should be thinking about. I can guarantee you that not all of you have got your own plan. Sorry, this is the wrong crowd. You probably have, you know what your NRR is going to be. But I can tell you at the presentations that we have for retirees, they have not the faintest idea how much money they need at retirement, how far they are, what percentage that is of their final salary. All very boring things for anybody who's not in retirement. So we have to start looking at other more interesting ways of getting people excited about saving and improving their financial advice and their financial outcome. So we are working on goals-based saving and helping people to save for something as easy as a holiday in 2 years' time. So, and then once we have shown them how easy that is and we're not going to bite and we don't ask for blood or your mother's maiden surname or whatnot, then you can explain to them, okay, well, let's throw in a tax-free saving account here. Okay, now as your budget expands, okay, let's see if you can increase your contribution rate. So it is helping people to know more, and then by giving that them that knowledge, you also help the economy, because now people will have more money that they want to save and they want to utilize, and it is going to be, over the long term, a better solution than just trying to solve for retirement. And we know that people don't even, they can't comprehend how far retirement is. I'm getting close to retirement, but even for me, it's like, ish, okay, tomorrow, let's think about it. There's still plenty of time. So what about a 25-year-old? And when I started at Forbes, it sounded like quite a lifetime away. And I have spent my lifetime at Forbes, and now here we are. So now this is becoming really interesting for me, but not for a 25-year-old. So we have to make a difference to people. And the more we can get in front of people, the better it is going to be. The more we get to our employers and make sure that those employers can improve it for their members, the better. This is not something that is done in isolation. It is not just the actuaries that have to solve it, the administrator, the fund. We all have to work together. It's the employer and the fund and the trustees and the administrator and the advice provider and the counselors, so that we can work together to get this whole thing sorted out and make it better for the members. So it is always very funny for me to see that employers, when it comes to the point where they need to go over from what is legally required, which is the counseling, now they have to implement an advice structure. Now they go, no, we can't give you any access to advisors, because first of all, we think that the advisor is going to give you the wrong advice, and you just have to do it yourself, because we think that you're going to come back to us to complain about the quality of advice that is being given. So it is funny for me, because employers spend an inordinate amount of time, I'm sure they didn't realize they were going to spend so much time, making sure that it is whatever retirement fund they choose is the correct retirement fund and the correct provider and the right default strategy and the right investment strategy. So they spend all of that time. And then what happens? As soon as the person leaves, they take the money and it's gone. So what is the benefit? Who really got the benefit out of this? So if we can get the employer and the trustees to say, okay, this is our strategy for the retirement fund, but this is the strategy that we have for the advice, and we can have a trusted financial advisory solution for our members, so that they don't have to go out and try to find advice on the corner of a street from some person who's used to be a hairdresser and doesn't have a CFP, then you can say, but we believe in the structure that we have set up for you, for our members, not only while they're in the fund, but we're also going to help them going forward. And that could mean making use of the same company to provide the administration and the advice. It could mean making sure that, or making the it possible for the funds that they had in the retirement fund that you, Mr. Trustee and Mr. Employer, said that it is a good enough fund while they are with you. Now, those same portfolios and those same products are available when the person comes and they want to use it in their own capacity. And through that, there could be special fees negotiated. They're probably in a better solution and structure than what they would have been if they went out onto their individual, onto retail product. So make sure that there is a continuum and that you don't break that, because otherwise what is the point? And so it will definitely benefit us to have the employers more interactive and more buying into the whole advice solution. So the access to advice needs to be expanded as well. It's not just, like I said, when we get to a specific point, you need to make that available for your active members, for the person who has a question about, should I have life cover extra, yes or no? Mentioning that the default regulations that funds have in place go a very far way to assist members. But even if you have variable contribution rates and you have variable death benefits that you can offer members, they don't know how to use it and what the benefit is of doing all of this. And can they then go down? Can they go up? So all of that needs to be explained for a person if you really want to get value out of it. But it is crucially important that the defaults that are available for members are already good enough that they can help. So the access to advice, I will really beat that drum very, very hard. You need the advice when you need it. So you don't ask about what the engine size of a car is going to be until you start looking for cars. You're not going to keep all of that information necessarily in your mind until you need it. Same thing with financial advice. You don't always think about what your medical aid benefits are exactly, but you do read up about it and find out and get more information when you get to that point when you need to change the medical aid. The contact methods can definitely improve. We are going into a digital world. We are going to be able to make use of more AI to get information. So the get in front of a person as quickly as possible. We are living in a digital world where I can pick up my phone and I can have the information that I'm looking for immediately. Our members are expecting that as well from the fans. It's not the old... it's not years ago when a quarterly statement was sent out to a member and the member got it 3 months after the quarter end because it sat in a person's HR office for months and months before they handed it out to the members. Now the members want online access, they want a chatbot, they want help right there and then when they have a question. So all of those things are things that we are working on that we can help members. Digital exiting so that they can go through a journey themselves when they get to retirement or when they leave or whenever they need it. The capacity needs to be expanded. You can't have one human sitting in front of one member and then there are 6,000 members on the fund. So you need to have expansion available as well so that you can make it easier so that you start with counseling where you have the group sessions, you have webinars. We've recently started having two-part seminars. There are up to 5,000 people that RSVP for each of those sessions. We are having it in 5 different languages because we can't just say that this is the only language that we're going to do it in. So things like that, there are so many new things that that are available that we can use to get in front of those members and make it scalable, get it to more members. And then through all of this, we have to improve the members' knowledge. We are sitting, as Dovi explained earlier, we are sitting in a situation where everything has to be really as plain and simple as possible, and we do try that, but people don't even understand we would think easy terminology like what is a percentage and how does it work? What is the inflation rate? How does that work? People do not understand it. Compound interest, that's like another subject that you have to explain. And we really have to just go back to the basics. Unless you're in the industry, I don't think you are... You have other things that you're interested in. If you don't think about finance the whole time. But that's why you have an advisor. That's why you have the counselors, so that we can prompt you when you need to speak to an advisor or when you need to speak to a counselor. So it is very, very important that we also improve the knowledge of our members out there and just incrementally all the time. So that is my story. Thank you for listening to me. I'm handing over to Darby, and he will take your questions, I think.
Thanks, Rita. Just as a summary then to end off, members aren't in great shape. Lots of criticism from all areas, as we all know, about the industry. NSSS would not be on the cards if we as an industry, you know, did better. I mean, let's be honest about that. So, and we see the stats every day, you know. So let's do some introspection and see what we can do better. A part of the answer is two-part. I personally think, you know, this is the biggest change in the retirement industry, even bigger than DB to DC, and it'll have a pronounced effect on members in the long run. Great change, wonderful for South Africa, wonderful for the members. But the other angle is advice and access to advice. And I sometimes tell the team, you know, we should stop using the word advice. Let, you know, the guy in the street use advice, but we in the industry should just call it help, because it's actually just help to members, and that's what RBC was about. So we need to sort this help angle out. RBC is one, ERBC is an advancement, and then the tech and the digital around it is needed with the advice. Not just at retirement or at certain other points, but throughout the life. And then, you know, I want to urge all of you that are involved in funds and also in your daily discussions. I think the difference that we can make is at the fund level, where the decisions are made, is to push awareness around how many members are being addressed and the issues being addressed, and get feedback on that. Instead of a trustee pack with a lot of governance and rules and tick box exercises, get pages of feedback in terms of how many members were talked to, what was their responses, you know, did it change their decisions, is the contribution rates higher for those members or not, you know, those type of things, because then we're really making a difference in people's lives, rather than worrying about, you know, getting, you know, an advisor in that's going to screw the people. It's about monitoring and making sure that we get the right people in front of the members. The stuff that we're putting in place, like the defaults, is awesome. The portfolios that they invest in. I mean, lots of work, as Rita said, going into that, and that's now really world class in my view. You know, the default portfolios, the returns, the access around that, that's really world class. But now the member must start to understand that and start to say, why aren't I investing more in that? Because this is such a great vehicle. And then when I have to make the calls, that I make the right call. So let's focus our attention on that. The ERBC and the RBC and the advice are just tools in order to get to more of the members. I was very afraid when Francois called originally, because he says, yeah, I must position RBC versus advice. And said, yeah, I think it's complimentary, and hopefully we made that point. So thanks for the time. Happy to take any questions.
Davi, Rita, thank you very much for that presentation. I think, as you said, we hear that a lot of help is needed in the industry. I don't see any online questions yet, and we'll get to the floor. There's one, if we can get the mic there. But in the meantime, so I think you have experience on both sides. You know what we as actuaries do, and you understand the administration and the consulting, the advice side. What would you say is the one or two things that we as pensions actuaries can do to help? What can we do better or more? Is it be more involved with the trustees, with the employers, with the counselors? Where can we help the most within the framework that we have?
Undoubtedly with data. So I would push your administrators, your funds, your you know, to get the data available to the trustees and to the employer, you know, because it's the trustees, but also the employer who wants the well-being of their members, and to get the data to say how many people would, you know, were given advice, how many people asked for this, how many people changed their mind, you know, to get that data in the form of, you know, delivery to. And one can play, you know, once you have the data, you can do a lot of analysis on that to see, is it actually working or is it not working? Because why do we do it if it's not working? So I think it's data, and I think actuaries should start, you know, doing a lot more than that, more of that, and make sure that you get the right data to give the right info back to the, and change the behavior.
Hi, thanks for that. So I've just been thinking, and I've been thinking this for a long time, and I just wanted to get your views. I mean, a lot of the work seems to be doing around getting members to make the right choices. They're not making the right choices, get them to make the right choices. I mean, should they be having those choices to make? I'm not talking for your top 5% of execs. I'm talking for your 90% of your members. Should they have to be the ones to make those choices about every single aspect of something that's as long-term and as kind of intangible as a retirement savings? I mean, we've looked at like national systems all over the world, and in no national system you've got that bare benefit that is just the benefit. You contribute what you contribute, you get what you get, and there you go. And only on top of that you get to kind of go, okay, well now I want to play around, or now I can get advice. But here we kind of seem to be doing it the other way. And I wonder, I mean, that's adding cost, complexity, and I think quite a lot of just complexity to the system. And since you'd made the comment that two pots will solve quite a lot of problems, I mean, that's, preservation's been something that we've been trying to get right for a long time with little success, whereas just a simple legislative change will kind of get that portion right. So I was just wondering what your views are.
I mean, categorically agree 100%. I mean, I think there's funds, I mean, and I sit on the administrator side, and it's the lowest form, you know. You've got actuaries, and then consultants, and then the administrator. We always have to take the complexity of, you know, everything that everybody can think of, you know, to give choice, and ultimately that just costs money, and you know, you make mistakes and those type of things. So, just with regards to the administration, I would make it a lot simpler, but certainly for the members, we see. All of us know, you know that the members don't need those choices, that you know that the members don't make those choices. So part of what I think the actuaries must do, because people are not going to listen to the administrator coming and saying, you know, let's make it simpler, because, you know, that's doing it for yourself. You're not going to listen to an advisor doing that. You're not going to listen to the sacredness of the actuary in the middle is the one that must drive that. So I agree with you 100%. There's no benefit in the complexity. There's no benefit in the choice for the member. If there was only one default portfolio for a fund, you know, it would be more than enough. We've opened portfolios and choices, you know, and then there's one exec that goes into it. And then there's, you know, maybe another member that works in the same office as the exec that goes into it, and the rest still goes into the default. So, you know, and you have to explain all the portfolios, give feedback on all the portfolios, unitize all of them. It is an absolute waste of time. I promise you, it's not even just a debate. There shouldn't be choice. We should get back to the point where the trustees have big enough balls with the advisors to actually make the calls and say, this is the best for this fund. And go through with it. And, you know, low income and high income, a well positioned balanced fund is perfect. So I agree with you. Less choice, more compulsion, and therefore makes it easier for the defaults, makes it easier for the annuitization, makes it easier for all of those. And then even with the default annuities in the fund and those type of things, members should be encouraged to use those from a cost perspective. There's oversight. I tell the funds that I go to, do you understand that you've got one of the best asset consultants in the room, you've got one of the best actuaries in the room, you know, you've got one of the five of the best asset managers give you feedback every quarter. No individual advisor have access to all of that skills. No individual advisor. And you as a fund have all of that skills in the room deciding on what's the best for the members. It must be a great answer, and it's cheaper. So, you know, just implement that one answer. So I think we must move away from all the complexity and the choice, for sure, 100%. And it is where the industry is going to go. It's definitely going to go that way. It's just a question of how we get it past, you know, past the boards of trustees who think they add value by having choice.
Sorry, but I think it's also an employer issue, because the employers, when we've done work for employers, they always want to benchmark, you know, what are other employers doing? So if this guy's offering choice, then I must also offer choice. Yeah. So, because, you know, it's seen as a benefit by the member. So they also need to be brought into the room, I suppose.
Agreed, and, you know, that's why I said I don't mind answering the questions, and most of my answers will be controversial. But we also try and earn our money, you know. The asset consultant's not going to sit there and say, you know, this one portfolio is actually fine. You know, he's going to say, no, you must have this and you must have this so that I can, you know, earn some money. And then the actuary is going to say, let's make it a little bit more complex, otherwise I don't have a job anymore. You know, so I think we can earn our bucks by saving the fund some money and showing and saying, you know, this is the right answer, including the employer. All of them want, you know, everybody in the value chain wants to say, I did my job, and therefore, you know, that's a tick. And I test it. I tested the market. I tested all the outcomes. I tested all the probabilities. Your job as that advisor is to do that, you know, behind the scenes, and then come up with one solution. It's the same answer. When you look through the stats, and I mean, maybe we should publish more of the stats of you know, how many people are actually in the defaults and how much time and money and energy the rest wastes. It's just one of those things. So we should try and move away as easy and as quick as possible from all the choice.
Thank you, Davi. I agree the retirement benefit consulting and even the enhanced is the way to go. But to add to Joe's question from the employer involvement, I'm almost thinking, should we not take a step back? Because I think, Rita, you said by the time you get involved 2 months after the employee signed up, he's already filled in his forms and all that. However, he chose a 5% contribution rate. And as a EB consultant employer, you know, we put the 5% on the table, you know. Mm-hmm. Is there not a problem with benefit design as well? And I know there's liquidity, all those pressures, but I almost would take it one step back to say proper benefit design is also important. Thanks.
I agree, Anton, and I think you know, if you try and be, you know, back to the question, if you try and at the end bring simplicity in, where it's complex up front, then and it doesn't allow for it, then everything fails, and that's why it's failing. I mean, I'll open to you. When I joined Forbes, I could not understand how few members invest in the fund annuities. It's the best thing that's ever been designed. You know, I will put all my money in an in-fund annuity. I would just not think twice. In my previous job, we designed it and had to get it approved within a month or two because the CFO wanted to retire, you know. And his instruction was, "I'm not taking my money out of this fund, so get it right." And these are the people that understand. So we must get that journey right so that works, because that's great for the member. And again, you have advisors, the top in the industry, which you know, does a lot of research, does a lot of work with a lot of substance behind them, that can fulfill that role and design those things. So, but it's the whole value chain. You can't now make a massively complex annuity because the problems is up front. So that whole thing must work, including the RBC, including the communication, including the education throughout. Tupot's going to force us to do that now, and that's why I'm so excited about it. The members are going to ask us now. They're going to ask all of us every day, what's happening here, what's happening there? I took 10 Rand. What's happening with this? What's happening with that? We're going to have answers as an industry, and it's going to make it easier for them to make informed calls when they do have to make choices.
Let's take 2 more questions, one there at the back and one on the other side.
Oh, yes, I have 3 questions, but these are mainly towards communication, you know. So over the years, is there any increase in members or any, you know, individual seeking advice? And then the second question is, what's the effective medium of communication, given that we are in a digital era? There's a lot of ways we can use to communicate. And then the third one is, people seem to be running away from advice, you know. It's either turning it down or they are postponing it, you know. Is there something that we are doing wrong, maybe our approach? And then what can we improve to make sure that members approach us for advice, you know, because members seem to be running away from advice and then they turn down advice. So, yes, those are my three questions.
Effective communication, it's the middle one, so I'll start with that. You help me throughout. Please. The effective communication is a combination. It's not one. You know, whenever we design these stock manikis that say things, these interactive video type of things, then it's a massive thing, but then there's only 10% of people that does that. Then you send an email, there's 5% of people that read that, but it's a different 5. And then you do a one-on-one session, there's a different 10% of people that come there. You have to do everything. It's, and again, when you sit at the fund, you know, ask your administrator and ask your advisor and ask your RBC provider and, you know, who else is involved, even the asset consultant. You know, how many times have you seen members and how many times, if what type of interaction have you had? It has to be a combination. On the effect of advice, and again, I'll use us as an example. We fail. Fully, so I'll say that right up front. We fail because, you know, we can't see the difference in members yet, except where we actually get it right and where the employer works with us. Rita's named the employer a lot. It's the employer and the trustees. We've got a small little fund which wanted to leave us. It was ugly, and we went in. We said, okay, can we realistically give us 12 months? And what's your main purpose? Now our members want to be happy. It's a 300-man squad fund, so it's easy to change everything. Our members want to change. Our members want different behavior. So we put the advice framework for the members in place. So the members could talk to somebody at Forbes every day. You know, it's an overkill and it's difficult. And on their website, you know, the names of the people are there. And when they reach any journey, it was a very interactive thing. That fund is now the happiest fund. They've increased their contribution rates by 3, 4, 5% on average over time now, from 13 to 17, because they love the benefits that they're getting. You know, whenever anything happens in any of those individuals, they ask each other, have you spoken to the advisor that's on the website that's available, or the RBC, have you asked advice? Everything has just improved. Their estimated net replacement ratio has increased by like 10 or 15% just in a year. Through, you know, working with them. It's not possible for us to do everything like that for every fund, is what they tell me, and I say, why not? That's actually what we need to do for members. So yes, advice helps, and it does make a difference, but not by sending out an email and saying, please contact me if you need help. And then what was the last one?
From our side, when we do campaigns now to get hold of members, we have changed over to WhatsApp, because in WhatsApp you can embed a lot of links and you can get the person to make a decision on the WhatsApp. So, for example, you send out a campaign and then you say, do you want help? Do you want to speak to an advisor? Did you just have an administration query, et cetera, et cetera? So it is a much richer journey, and it's an easier way to communicate than, for example, just an SMS. Yes, we do still have some SMSs that go out. Yes, we do send out emails as well. But what is funny is that these days, if you want to send an email, we have to send an email out to a person to warn them that somebody is going to try to contact them, because they are so afraid of phishing and things like that. So they want to know, who's the person that's going to speak to me? And then we also ask in that email, is there a different way that you want to be communicated with? We suggest that we phone you, but if you prefer a Zoom or Teams meeting, let us know, and when is it suitable for you that we can get hold of you? So it's not a one solution, but we are moving away. We're moving towards WhatsApp, for example. What was the last question, sorry? Or did we answer everything? Three-part book.
I think what it leads to also is cost. You know, so everybody will sit here and say, okay, that sounds great, but who's going to pay for this? You know, because you can up the admin fee, because then the administrator must do the ERBC and the RBC and all of that for free, because you don't want your members to pay for it. Otherwise, you know, it becomes conflicted again. But we're not going to do that because only 10% of members use it, and then you get into all these actuarial debates. Solve those things rather, but get the members in front of somebody that can help them. And there are ways to solve those. I mean, the cost can't be prohibitive. We all understand in the industry, all the providers, you're all part of providers in some form or other. You understand that we have to get to the members, so let's solve the problem to get there and not let cost or conflict or governance processes, tick box exercises stand in the way. We've overcome most of the cost issues and addressing them as we go along. We just can't find enough people to do ERBC. If I could hire 100 more tomorrow, I'll do it, because I think it makes a massive difference to the clients.
Okay, let's take the last single question there.
Thank you. Adla Khan from the PFA. I love the focus we have on member education, but I'm curious to know what is the industry norm on employer education, specifically with all the changes coming.
Yeah.
A lot of employers may not know what their role is going to be played in the two-pot. Is it a situation where member must go directly to the fund to claim their 30,000 rand, or is it going to be through the employer? I just want to know what the norm is currently. It seems there's a trend of once you sign up for the product, we want your participation. But are employers educated enough to be involved in the implication of what's beneficial for members? That's my only question.
Yeah, I think it's a very important question, and it is actually a two-part question. So, or my answer will be two parts. The one is the pure education. You can't do the education with the members without taking the employer with. I agree, and we actually, you know, I think started at the fund employer member, because ultimately the first question that you ask is you ask your boss or you ask your HR. So, you know, there has to be a symbiosis there, and everybody has to be on the same wicket, and you have to do that. And it's not different, luckily, with Two-Pot, for instance, and I think most of these things now, if you have the view of the member and you want to do the best thing for him, the education with the employer, I think, you know, is more or less the same. It's not a different type of, it's not like an old DB fund where you had to have different discussions with members and employers. You know, now you have more or less the same discussion. The second part is, though, that the market is moving, and we all have to be aware to talking to the individual. You know, so that is the tricky bit that we'll have to navigate, all of us. And these people keep on asking about the actuary being in the middle of that employer, member, and providers. Members have to be communicated to directly. Two-Pot, they're going to ask the administrator now directly, you know, what's my value, and they can claim directly and they can take it out. You know, I think the role of the employer must now be to monitor and to get all the info, get all the stats, get all the data, get it in a form that actually makes sense to them, to say, are my members okay off with the current provider or with the way that it's handled or with the defaults and the things that I've put in place, or is it not? And then play that oversight role, which is it's a relatively different role than sending somebody to a trustee meeting and hands off, you know. So, but it's all because they want the well-being of their members changed. So I think that is changing. Direct member communication with the administrator or the providers, but oversight from the employer in terms of, do I have the right people that's talking to my members?
Thank you, Darwin and Rita. A lot of food for thought, and that we can implement from our side as well. Really, really appreciate your wisdom and expertise that you shared with us today.
Thanks
very much.